Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Evie Cafe Takeaway podcast. Yes, it's that podcast that focuses on the zero emission future that we all hope for. This week, we have the wonderful and very professional Jess Shannon. She knows about this stuff. Welcome, Jess.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is where we're about to get exposed, isn't it? This is where our unprofessionalism comes out, big style.
No, you get to see how silly I am in real life.
Yay! Real life, Jess.
Woo! Yeah.
But we've been talking already, and we may chuck in at the end of the podcast if anybody's interested. Just, you know, it's an exciting world that we live in. And Jess, just give us a background of the world that you live in, because it is kind of similar. You do a lot of some of the same sorts of things in the same sorts of space. So just talk to us a little bit about your recent journey, and we can explore the rest of it later. But tell us what you're doing right now and what that journey looks like.
Yeah, of course. So I do a few different things. So I would say one of the main things I do is I create content around electric cars and vans, mostly through writing, but I do some video content. I obviously do podcasts. You might have seen me on stage in some different shows and things like that. So I'm always talking about this stuff and the adjacent stuff as well. So also energy and built environment, infrastructure, that kind of stuff. I also run Jet Social, which is my marketing agency that I've been running for 14 years this year, which is wild. That's mostly focused on business-to-business marketing within like e-mobility and energy. And then I also run something called Charge Happy as well.
Wow, sis. I mean, talk about juggling some stuff there. My goodness. So, I mean, most people never start one business in their life. It seems that you've got a few. What has driven that, this kind of energy that's given rise to all of these businesses?
I like to follow my energy. I like to follow what I'm interested in. And for a lot of what I've done, I've been able to do that under the umbrella of Jet Social. And I started off more in kind of traditional automotive and then kind of went through to e-mobility and electric cars. But because I'm quite a passionate person and I get the, you know, the joy of being able to manage my own time, it just kind of makes sense for me to follow those different passions. So while most stuff does kind of come under the umbrella of Jet Social, there's all of these other little kind of passion projects that come from it, like my motorsport business, like Charge Happy, and like a lot of kind of my speaking and journalism work as well.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europe Car, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europe Car's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
Do you get stage fright, Jess? Because I remember the first time I saw you was at Carfest, and I hadn't been aware of you until that point. And Carfest 2 years ago, you came on stage and I thought, ooh, hello. This is somebody who knows her stuff, really does, and then became very, very aware of you popping up at the same shows, same events, doing solid, solid stuff. And then you really got me with the mental health stuff that you do. So well-being and calmness. And do you get nervous when you go on stage?
Well, first off, I don't think it was Carfest, because while I have been to Carfest, no one's invited me on stage there. So thank you for bringing that up, just in case anyone from Carfest is listening. I would love to be on stage there. It might have been one of the London shows I did. I think that's... No, it was Everything Electric was the first time I think I met
was
you.
Was it?
Yeah. Okay. See, we all do so many events now. Who knows where we've been at any one point? Someone's going to tell me, yeah, you've been to Carfest, you've been on stage. Pretty sure I haven't,
but I'm gonna go I know the evidence.
I used to, but I wouldn't say I do anymore, not in the traditional sense of what people think stage fright is. I remember the first ever full like 25 minute talk I gave, which was also the first ever time I think I'd even been on stage, was horrible. And I had awful stage fright and I just read from a notebook. It was a motorsport event. I was just reading from a notebook with my talk. And, you know, it was useful. It was educational in the way that I wanted it to be. but I overprepared. I allowed myself to panic about it. But as I've done more of that over the years, I've kind of got used to it. It's just now kind of a normal part of my job. And that's not to say there aren't nerves, because I think nerves are important for making you want to do a good job. So I have nerves, but I tend to just kind of throw myself in at the deep end and trust myself. If I start to overprepare or give myself too long to get like anxious about something, that's when I start to feel it. And I remember being at an event, I got there an hour early to do some filming, had finished the filming after about 20, 25 minutes, and then just had all this time to stew and just get myself kind of wound up about this event when I'd done stuff like that 100 times before. Whereas normally if I rock up 5 minutes before I have to go on stage and just kind of go with the flow, I'm absolutely fine.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I'm much the same. I can rock up to an event, it's almost like you flick a switch and you just go into presenter mode. How close to the real Jess Shanahan is your presenter mode?
I would say my presenter mode is probably closer to the real me than any of the other stuff that I do. And this has been something I've been struggling with for, you know, maybe a year or so, has been, who am I? Like, you know, I've built a brand and I've spent 14 years like really curating that and cultivating that to be exactly what I want. And then I'm like, that's not me. That's way too professional. It's not that I'm unprofessional, but I also have a lot more personality than I think I used to show maybe a couple of years ago. And on stage, I think that just naturally comes out because I'm not reading from a script most of the time. I do end up telling a joke, which all of my friends hate because they think it's quite cringe, and I love that. I want to make everyone cringe. Audiences love it, so that's all that matters. Or I hope they do. There's a lot more of me that comes out because I'm just kind of vibing with the topic, what's happening in the room. Obviously, I'll have done prep, I'll have met my guests, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's just a chance for me just to be and to use kind of these skills and this experience that I've built up over the years without even having the chance to sanitize that in some way, like I can if I'm writing something or if I'm editing a video. So I think I'm actually better when I'm live. That's not to say there isn't a place for, you know, really polished, edited stuff. But I think, yeah, I'm definitely closer to the real me when I'm unedited and unfiltered.
We like it that way. Oh, yes.
But this, it is funny, isn't it? Because I think we all share that in common, I think, you know, that kind of willingness to kind of just jump in and go do. I find it harder to present. And that struggle, that battle as to... Who are you? Who are you really? Is that really you? And are you like that at home? You know, well, yes and no. I mean, sometimes I'm not quite as animated and we are sort of, an accentuated version of ourselves, potentially, I suppose, in that unfilteredness. What's your favourite thing to do?
I love being on stage. In the sense that, I mean, I love giving talks, especially if they're about mental health. And to go back to what you said, JC, and like talking about that stuff's really personal to me. So it's obviously easier to talk about it. So I love doing talks like that. But I love being a stage host because I then get to sit down and watch all of these amazing people talk about the stuff that they know tons about. And I love to learn. It's such a great way to do it. And then I get to be the one to ask the first question and just to kind of absorb all of that information. I find it very, very engaging and very, very fun.
That is such a cool thing. I'm with you. I love being, and it's far too often the case, but the dumbest person in the room. Because
you know, brilliant. I love it.
It is, right? Because you get to ask all the questions that you want to ask of the best people in doing this stuff. And every day is a school day. You mentioned mental health stuff there. And obviously on the Evie Cafe, we've engaged with this for a lot of time. Both John and I are mental health first aid trained, which, you know, I hope comes in useful some of the time with the people that we talk with, and we've been on our own journeys. What's your journey been like with mental health? Because typically there is a bit of a journey in the background. I don't know what you feel cool to share, but go for it.
I'll share anything. So mine has been, I think, quite interesting. How far do we go back to school? I didn't get on very well at school. just because I just didn't feel like I fit in. And I hope everyone takes this in the way that I mean it, and it doesn't seem big-headed, but I felt like I knew everything. I didn't feel like I was learning, or I certainly wasn't learning in a way that suited me. Fast forward to having a proper job, quote-unquote proper job. Didn't get on with it, didn't like to be told what to do, always felt that I could do more. There was more within me. Started my own business. That felt much better for me, but there were still ups and downs. There were still struggles. And I was diagnosed with, what's it called? General anxiety disorder. I think it was what I was diagnosed with at the time. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. Anxious person. And like, put in context of what this is like, because I don't think people will, anyone who knows me won't understand maybe what I used to be like. I wouldn't even go to a shop. Like, I was that nervous of like just going anywhere. And I had the opportunity to go to a motorsport event and drive a race car simulator. And I was panicking about it. I didn't sleep the night before and I was just a mess. And that's what made me go, actually, wait a sec. Do I have anxiety? Which then led to the diagnosis. Then much later, I saw someone that I followed online had been diagnosed with ADHD. And I was like, oh, suddenly like my whole life made sense. So literally within weeks, I was diagnosed because I went down the private route. I was able to do that at the time. And it was before the, you know, even private, you know, ADHD diagnosis companies are just slammed now. So it's really hard still to get a diagnosis. I did it before all that. So got that diagnosis, got medicated, and I was like, it was never anxiety. It was always ADHD, and it made so many other things, like the way that I learn and the way that I approach situations and all of the things of how I felt and emotional regulation, everything just suddenly made sense. So my journey has been very up and down. I've always been very open about it because I think people need that. And I remember being at an event way before I was diagnosed, promoting my book, and someone came up to me and we had this like really open discussion about anxiety. And she's like, I've literally never heard anyone talk about it like this. And I was like, cool, this is now me. I'm never gonna not say something, because I think it's so helpful to people to hear someone talking about their journey. So when I was diagnosed with ADHD, I started giving, once I'd kind of come to terms with it myself, because that was a whole journey in itself, I started giving talks on it. I started being more vocal about it because I thought it was really important. And, you know, so many people have, you know, since gone on to, you know, go and get diagnosed. So yeah, up and down journey, but I feel like I'm in a place now where I understand where I've come from, and that's made me a stronger person.
I'm fascinated by you because, as I say, I've known you for a couple of years, but I've never had the chance to chat with you and discover a little bit about you. But what I did notice, and I'm going to be hugely shallow here, and apologies for that, but I think you can take it. You have a really strong look.
Mm.
I look at you and I think, here's a woman who knows her own mind. She is strong. You dress in a way which is really, my daughter was a goth, and so, you know, black fingernails, all that kind of stuff, that eyeliner. And I identify with that look. I see you. Now, I'm just a boring, middle-aged, bald idiot who wears, you know, just the same as everybody else. That sense of identity that you have, is that something that you have embraced for a lot of your life? Is it used as a barrier? Is it used as a weapon? How did you discover your look, and why do you wear it?
Oh, that's such a good question. I think this is... No one's ever asked me this. So you're just getting what you're getting now. I think this is very layered. I think it's a few things. So I love dressing up. It's a creative way of expressing. Yeah, exactly. I love it. I love being overdressed. I love wearing something silly. I love people complimenting my outfits. Like, I just like it from a creative point of view. It makes me feel good. But it is also the product of anxiety of like, well, surely no one's going to be judging me as a person if they're judging my outfits first. And those two things have like weirdly blended together to produce this. So I also don't want to be like everyone else. I never have as a teenage goth and as a whatever I am now. So there's an element of that. So yeah, it's very multifaceted. I think, yeah, it definitely is a defense mechanism, probably like at its core, But like, I've accepted that. I'm running with that. And I also enjoy like, what silly thing am I going to wear on stage? You know, what am I going to tell my nail technician to do that's silly next? What am I going to do my makeup as? And I like that process. It's kind of like putting on the outfit to go do the thing. Whereas normally if I'm at home, I'm in my pajamas with a book with my cat next to me. So like there's these two sides to me, real sides of me. But one has to kind of like dress up and get ready to go be the boss and talk about cool stuff to do with cars.
But you give people also that sense that it's okay to be you. And you are that person who, you're almost like a flying flag that says, be whoever you are. You know, I've come to terms with who I am, and I'm quite happy with that. You know, I wear these ridiculous glasses for exactly that reason. One, I'm instantly recognisable, but two, it's a defence mechanism. I almost go into character, and that was the reason why I asked you that question about the presenter character and the real you. And Paul probably knows me better than anybody. There are two very distinct me's, but they're very closely related, I hope, because I try to be as authentic as possible. And there's no doubt with you, Jess, that you are 100% authentic, open, honest, and you'll just give it as you see it. I love that about you.
Yeah, thank you. And it's really nice to know that people see that. And I think one of the biggest compliments I can get in anything that I do is for someone to say that I made them feel comfortable. And I had that at an event I did recently. One of the panelists said, is it you who's going to be moderating? And I was like, yeah. And she's like, oh, thank God. She's like, I feel so comfortable with you. This was the first time I'd met her. I'd spoken to her before online. And I was like, I'm very happy with that compliment. Like, you can compliment what I'm wearing, but you know, if someone feels comfortable around me, that's the best thing I can hear. I really like that. And it's not necessarily that I go out of my way to do that, but it's a big part of who I am. I want regardless of what situation I'm in, I want people to feel comfortable talking to me, interacting with me, that I'm not necessarily going to be scary. I'm not going to ask hard questions. I will ask hard questions, but I'll do it in a nice way. So I think that's you know, an important thing that I try to bring to any event, and especially if I'm talking about something like mental health or like ADHD, I think that's even more important than if I'm talking about battery management systems, for example.
Gosh, talk about the sublime to the ridiculous. My goodness. I'm fascinated. I just kind of, you know, because it feels like the harder we try, the less we are authentic, which is, I guess, why those in the moment spontaneous bits, those things that, and I get why people sometimes think that, well, which one is you, but actually both are, because we're all like that, aren't we? We have different moments, but I think from what it sounds like, you've become comfortable accessing the different elements of you. And what do you think the secret is to that? What's that inner confidence? Because you talked about goth being a bit of a defense, you know, what are you defending? Because you seem to be able to put out the strong sides of both of you.
Yeah, I feel like there's still a bit of imposter syndrome left. And I think everyone has a bit of that to a certain extent. So there's that. Even though, like, deep down, when I, you know, actually critically think about it and I challenge myself on it, I'm like, I do know what I'm talking about. It's fine. But I still then have that little panic of better wear a bright suit just in case, like, you know, I could just be the bright suit girl, even if it's not the, you know, electric car girl or whatever. So, I mean, obviously I'm joking, but like there is that kind of that sense of maybe I shouldn't be here. Maybe I don't know what I'm doing. And then I'm like, no, someone's asked me to be. I haven't just turned up and like inserted myself trying to do something, and I have to kind of rely on that fact over feeling. And so I think that I don't know, maybe you guys do this, but I tend to like pull pieces of myself apart. So this is the piece of me, it's the real me that goes on stage. Then there's the piece of me that is doing funny videos and telling jokes. So there's a piece of me that is considering doing comedy writing. And then there's me who's writing a bird poem and me who's writing a novel. Like it's all me. I'm just kind of like separating out those bits for the appropriate situation. I think that might be an ADHD trait. I think we're good at inhabiting a lot of different selves. And I like that because it means I can kind of, like with my all of my work, I can just go with the flow. Like, who am I today? And again, dressing, how I dress definitely is part of that. So like some days I'm going to be in hiking boots with binoculars and a big hat and running tights. And I'm like, I'm hiking, Jess. Other days I'll be in the big blazer and everything. And it genuinely is like, who do I feel like today? And I think that's quite freeing because I'm never putting myself in a box.
That is so cool. And look, what I want to get into, because the box that I've never sort of we've really talked about to any great degree is your motorsport box, because this is, you are somebody, I mean, that was the subject of your book, I think.
Yes. Or
certainly one of, I don't know if you've written more, but that, talk to us about how you got into motorsport and what it is you do within motorsport. You said about driving a simulator and doing other stuff, which by the way, is that, you know, if they're e-sims, are pretty challenging, aren't they? There's no small feat there. Talk to us a little bit about that motorsport, Jess, because it's one I've always been interested in.
Yeah, so my motorsport stuff at the moment isn't quite as exciting as I would have hoped it would be by this point, because I know I've spoken with people at the EV Cafe before about the e-scooter racing, which so far has not materialized. So I don't know what's happening there. But how I got into all of this was I was doing PR for a racing driver. Through her, I then met loads more racing drivers, and one of them asked me to be the boss of a Porsche race team. And I went, sure, that sounds fun. Had no idea what I was doing. But it literally was that simple. There's not really much more to that story other than I made friends. I got a race team. So moral of that story is make relationships, kids. It's good for business. And yeah, so I ran this team for a year, and I was tasked with getting sponsorship and press coverage and all of that kind of stuff. And because my background is sales and marketing and PR, found it really easy. And people were coming to us going, have you got so much sponsorship for this club racing car? Yes, it was a Porsche, but it was, you know, it was club racing. So it was a relatively low level in the grand scheme of all of motorsport. And I was like, I found it quite easy. And then I was like, is it not easy? And then I was like, oh, don't be big headed about how easy I found it. So I got talking to these drivers, and they were either too busy to go and get sponsorship, or they didn't have the knowledge of business as a whole. So to then go and pitch, you know, a race car as a marketing tool, they didn't even know where to start. So after a year, I left the Porsche race team after we won basically everything. So it seemed like a good time to stop. And I set up my business, Racing Mentor, and that was in 2017. Wrote the book, Get Paid to Race, in 2018. And that then basically took me pretty much all over the world teaching sponsorship to racing drivers, which has obviously been brilliant. It's a bit quieter now. I was exploring like new opportunities, like with the e-scooter racing. I've got, I can't even announce it, another really, really cool thing on the horizon to do with motorsport. Yeah, that's what I can tell you. But I've actually been quite quiet with it over the last couple of years. I've just been teaching in person because the whole idea was that I wanted to write a follow-up to Get Paid to Race. I didn't do that because I've had like a really tough couple of years, I would say. So I just didn't have the brain space to write another book. But I'm now focusing on that again. But yeah, that's how I kind of got into it. And it's now a relatively small part of what I do, but it's still a huge thing that I love, like, hugely. And I still have clients. I still write the content. I still, you know, help drivers get sponsorship in terms of teaching them those skills and run courses and webinars and things. So it's a nice way of kind of stepping outside of the, you know, the more business to business stuff that I do and actually interfacing with individuals and helping them kind of achieve that what they want to achieve. So it's very, very rewarding.
Amazing. Love that.
Jess, you are such a talent. So many things that you can turn your hand to. What's the dream? If you could, and I have no doubt you can, what is the dream that you are aiming for? You know, in my idle moments, I often wonder, could I have made it as a professional broadcaster, professional presenter? And I would still love to do that, despite my age, because I just think that's what I was put on this earth to do. What about you? What's your dream? What's that one thing that you think it could just happen?
Honestly, I don't know. I ask myself this all the time. And I'm, you know, from one week to another, I might have an answer, but it'll be different. I think because I like doing so many different things. And it's not that I can't stick with one thing. And I have stuck with one thing. And I you know, and I like doing that. But my energy is always kind of like, oh, I could do this. There's so many potential things I could be doing that I find it really, really hard to choose. I think if it were up to me, and like, you know, the absolute dream would be I would be doing events and creating content about electric cars to a high enough level that I would then have 50% of my time aside for writing fiction. So not necessarily like the big professional goal, but I would love to be able to dedicate more time to just sitting and writing and being creative. So that would probably mean more speaking gigs and then more maybe of my own time to do YouTube and stuff like that. Something where I could kind of control what I was doing. But without having to do some of those small annoying bits of work that just pay the bills in between. And, you know, like we've all got clients like that and it's fine. I like that work, but I would rather do the stuff I really love to a higher standard and more often, so I can then put more time aside to go and write things and be creative. Because last year I did a writing residency in France for 2 weeks, and it genuinely has changed my life, made me really kind of reevaluate a lot of stuff about what I do and how I do it.
Right. We're all questioners. This is what we do professionally.
Yeah.
You've given me the hook, that thing that I want to pull now to find out what's going on with the book. You talked about writing fantasy books. What is it you actually want to write? What's going on in that head that you need to get out and down on paper?
So I've just finished a fourth draft of a historical romance novel, and I've just given it to my friends to read, and they've given me a bunch of feedbacks, and I've got to go and do all of the edits, but I've got tons of stories in my head. It's not just that one. That one just seemed like the most accessible because it's historical. Cool. I can read history and do research. I don't have to do a bunch of making stuff up like I would with like proper fantasy, but I've got a sci-fi book in here. I've got loads of fantasy ideas, and I would just like to sit down and explore that and like be able to give time to that and treat it as a job, because otherwise it's just as and when I get a chance, which is a bit too piecemeal for me. I like to throw myself in and do like a good solid 2 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever it might be on one project. And the way life is, that's just hard to do, right? Which is why the residency was incredible, because I had 2 solid weeks of being around creative people where my job, so to speak, was writing my book. And then my playtime was writing poems and having music jam sessions with these wonderful women. And then going out and buying, you know, croissants or whatever we were doing in France, drinking wine, eating cheese. And it was incredible. And it was just a really nice insight into maybe not what real life could be, because it was a microcosm of just being creative in a different country. But maybe made me think like, oh, how can I have more of this in my life? How can I have more of these, you know, creative vignettes where I can dedicate myself to writing a book, even if it's for a day. And then I go to an event for the next 3 days, and then I've got the weekend to chill out, that kind of thing. So there's lots of ideas up here, and I am getting close to writing a book. It's not like it won't happen. But it would just be nice to be able to have the space to dedicate to it in a way that I don't really have right now.
Now, you're a creative person, so you'll get lots of ideas. And having ADHD, snap, you will be constantly thinking about 100 different things that you could do. Do you have a notebook or some way of capturing the genius that sometimes just pops into your head that you can come back to at a later stage?
Obviously, as someone with ADHD, I have several hundred notebooks. I do. And I do try to have notebooks for specific things. So I've got like a poetry notebook. I've got this is the tiny notebook I carry around with me just in case. And that is my favorite one to look back on, because the absolute nonsense that's in there that I'm like, I don't know what I was thinking when I wrote this. So it's not entirely helpful, but yeah, I do jot down ideas in that way. But then I also find myself very overwhelmed by it. And I have huge decision paralysis. So for all this talk we have of like, yeah, I'm super creative and I like to follow my flow, I also get stuck a lot because there are so many things I want to do. And then I'm like, cool, I've got some time to do one of these things. How do I pick which one? And then I end up doing nothing, which is incredibly frustrating. And I'm trying to work on that. But that's very hard because, yeah, there are too many ideas, one could say.
Wow. Jess, you articulate incredibly well. And I'm hearing no pauses. You're not struggling to kind of piece this together. This is something really well versed, something that comes out all of the time. The bit that I kind of want to understand is, why do you care enough to be good at articulating what's going on within Jess? Because it helps. And many people will be listening to this, feeling what you feel, experiencing what you feel, feeling stuck, not sure about, you know, which person to be today or when to be the right person. But you seem to have done a lot of work to unlock a lot of this, right? And you're really free in articulating it. How have you got to that place? Because it is often in trauma and difficulty and things that have troubled that then make you want to make it easier for someone else. Is that what's happened or is it something else?
I think it's a lot of little things rather than one big thing. I think since being diagnosed with ADHD, I think I feel like I'm making up for lost time in terms of like all of the stuff I struggled with at school and in my 20s. So I'm now like, I'm relearning myself, but I'm making an active effort to do that. But I've also been to therapy. You know, I'm used to talking about this stuff in a very open way. But also my two best friends, they also speak very openly like this. They're also very self-aware. So our conversations are like this. You know, there's nothing hidden. And I mean, a lot of the time, you know, I don't shut up, so I'm used to talking a lot and learning to articulate it in a way where it makes sense because there's so much going on. How can I get it out in a way that makes sense, is succinct, and no one is annoyed with me? So I think I just have a lot of these different kind of threads where I've been able to speak like this. But I think it goes back to something I said earlier where a person came up to a merit support event and was like, wow, I've never heard anyone speak about anxiety in this way. You've really helped me. I'm like, cool. Well, if it helps someone, I'm going to keep doing it. So I think that's a big driver, is that I've learned a lot about myself and I've been in a privileged position where I have the friends, I had the access to the therapy, I was able to get privately diagnosed with ADHD. All of those things put me in a position where I can talk about this stuff and hopefully help other people who may have not had those things either growing up or within their friendships or whatever it might be.
It's amazing. And I'm really conscious of how easy the conversation is as well. And I'm conscious that you are conscious of making the conversation really easy, which is nice. Mm. What does the future hold for Jess? How does it look? And I know you've got this thing that's a wee bit secret and you can't say too much. But what, aside from that, what does the future look like for you, next 3 to 5 years type thing?
I don't know. I think the last 2 years have been so hard that I've really had to kind of like reevaluate what business looks like for me, because the way I used to operate was a lot of writing work and a lot of social media and that kind of thing. And all of that's pretty much been erased with AI. So my business has taken a huge downturn, and I'm not going to be woe is me. I'll survive. I'm good. The result was that the speaking work picking up made me realize I love that. So I'm hoping to do more of that. My big goal for this year, I do know the answer to this. One of my big goals for this year was to do more speaking work about ADHD. And I'm talking like keynote speeches, maybe workshops, stuff like that. And that kind of comes off of the back of, I did a talk a couple of years ago about making space as a woman within motorsport. And that kind of focused on learning who I was and finding my people and all of that kind of stuff. I loved that. And then I did two panels, one last year and one the year before. They might have been both last year. I don't know what year it is anymore. I did these two panels that were about neurodiversity within the workplace, one specifically within engineering. And I loved it. And it was so nice to be able to talk about something so openly with people from different backgrounds to an audience who were maybe not often exposed to these kinds of discussions, and to have employers in the audience going, well, hey, what can we do to better serve people within our organization? I'm like, this is what we need. So I'd like to do more of that, more keynote addresses on that topic, and not necessarily just within e-mobility and automotive, like maybe stepping outside of that. So I have a few plans as to how I'm going to do that. So that's one big thing. I also think I am going to be able to at some point make more space for my more kind of creative work. So maybe finishing a novel, maybe finishing a book of bird poems, like whatever it might be. But certainly more speaking work on all topics, because like it's just unlocked something in me to the point where I've been considering doing an acting course, not to become an actor, but to improve my speaking work, and also doing a comedy writing course to also improve my speaking work. So I'm toying with lots of ideas as to how I can improve as a speaker as well.
Love that. Love that. That desire to learn, to grow.
Yeah.
It is just so good, isn't it?
It's a theme, isn't it, throughout all of the podcasts that we've done, that there is something about lifelong learning which drives people forward and they get new experiences, deliver new things. I'm fascinated to understand, Jess, you talked about fantasy. So let's create a scenario. Jess Shanahan, as you are now, is at a conference and you're approached by Jess Shanahan when she was 18. What advice would you give Jess Hannah Shanahan when she was 18?
Well, we'd probably both have a really big cry first. just like, get it all out. Come on, get it all out. I would probably just say that, like, all of that, there probably wouldn't necessarily be advice, but I would say all of that, like, fire and passion, like, you'll learn how to direct it. It will come in useful. It's not just making you feel a bit crazy and anxious. It's useful, and you do learn to kind of harness it in a way that becomes incredibly powerful, is what I would say to myself. And then I'd cry some more.
Oh, do you know what, that's beautiful. There is a real sense of empathy, you know, stretching across the years there, looking back at that 18-year-old self with all of that pent up, whatever it was, that lack of understanding, that as in of yourself, not being self-aware, not understanding your barriers and your difficulties and the challenges, and all of this energy, all of these ideas, all pent up. It's quite encouraging and inspiring, actually. So with that in mind, we have a closing tradition on the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast. You may judge by the smile, as you might know. And it is, of course, the presentation of the EV Cafe Magic Wand with associated lightning bolt. And so it's coming over the airwaves to you, Jess. And there it is going.
I'll take that. Thank you very much.
She's got it. She's got it.
The highly intelligent people who do that. Oh, yeah, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. It's the Imagine right thing now, to though, do. If I'd been really prepared and been like, here it is, I'm not.
Do you know what? One person got us. You'll have to watch the Magic Wands podcast because he's brilliant. It's on there. But anyway, you now hold the power. The power to make a wish and to see something change in the landscape that you are most associated with and or is most important to you. What would you do?
So I would make it so everyone feels like they can say what they need to say. And that goes many, many levels deep. So it's about being able to step outside of your comfort zone, ask for help and look for collaboration from a business point of view, because I think that's so important within e-mobility that, you know, obviously National EV Week, one of the huge themes was collaboration. I think that's so important. I think my magic wand would be waving that to make sure people are going, hey, we should be working together. But then also on the individual level, I think it's important that, you know, people are able to stand up for themselves and ask for what they want and feel safe to be able to say what they need to say. So I think it works on the individual level and the business level of just being able to articulate ourselves and look for that support and look for that collaboration.
Do you know what? That is so on point, isn't it? We've just recently had conversations with some people, and one of the topics of those conversations was this emotional security, I think. It's just such an important element of life. Emotional security, which often comes because of a change of attitude in the people around us. Because, you know, we can become comfortable with ourselves and say, I need help because, or this happened to me, can you help? Or I don't understand this, can you explain it to me? But if the people around us just dismiss that and unhelpful, cruel. Yeah, like kids, where we were cruel as kids. You know, if you had glasses, you were four eyes. If you, you know, you didn't look the same, you were the odd person or whatever it was. We, as kids, even today, they still separate. But, you know, I think we need to lose that. And I think you're absolutely on point. Emotional safety, emotional security, and the ability to reach out and collaborate across businesses is so important for the ability to move forward.
Yeah,
powerful,
absolutely.
Jess.
I said right at the beginning that I've worked with Jess on a couple of occasions and not really had the chance to get to know you and to talk. And you said that one of your wish was for us to be able to speak up and use our voice and say what we want to say. Jess Shanahan, I love you.
I think you are
utterly, utterly beautiful as a human being. And
thank you.
I can't wait to see you. You're going to be at the CV show, commercial vehicle show, in April?
I would think so, yes.
I'm hunting you down, lady, because I'm coming for you. I just want to spend time. And this is the thing that I guess we don't get to do as presenters and people who are hosting. We're running around all day, every day. I want to make time to be with you because you are next level brilliant.
Thank you so much. That means so much. And, I think I've said this before, that one of my favorite things at events is I will make a beeline for the EV cafe so I can get my hugs. And then I will go do my work. And then when I'm feeling a little bit tired, a little bit drained, recharge at the EV cafe, feel a bit more like myself and then go off and do my work. But yes, we are definitely due some time to actually just sit down and chat like normal human beings, not presenters who are just being amazing at work for 12 hours a day.
Let's make it so. Bless you, Jess. Thank you so much.
I was hoping I would get it done in the time that we had. And I'm just, because a picture that I remember very well, which was at the London Excel, and it's here somewhere, and I can't find it. Of course
this
I can't find it.
Really, really well you if mean. You're listening on Spotify or Apple.
I know, right? Well, so I'm going to get it, and we're going to put it in this video so that anybody that wants to is me, you, and John, Jess, at the London Excel in front of our thing, and it was just a lovely moment where you came out, let's get a selfie, yay! And it was... I remember really, really well. What thoughts would you want to leave us with, Jess? Any final thoughts to leave us with?
I just want to say thank you to you guys for allowing me to be myself. You know, often when I do podcasts, I'm in presenter mode, and like I said, that is me. But I'm talking about Electric Arts, which obviously I love. To be able to talk about myself is a really weird thing in that it's incredibly vulnerable, but I love it. And that might sound really self-involved, but I think it's because it's important. So thank you for the free therapy session. It's meant a lot. And thank you for, just allowing me to speak openly like this and share this kind of stuff with people, because I do genuinely love talking about this kind of stuff. And I do think it's important that we are more open. And for anyone who doesn't feel they can talk about this stuff, I hope that hearing me speak about it has maybe helped some people kind of become more aware of stuff that they're feeling and stuff that they're doing, whether it's kind of mentally or within their career as well. And thank you for giving me the platform to do that and asking me such lovely questions.
Man, it's been our privilege. And I guess, you know, as we open up the podcast, you know, this is all about that zero emission future that we all hope for. And whilst we might not have talked electric vehicles, and whilst we might not have talked about decarbonizing transport or things like that, what we've talked about is creating an environment where it can all happen. Because without that environment, without that positivity, without that freedom, we should be a sector. We've only been a sector for X number of years, you know, fill in the gap depending on who you are and how long you've been at it. But, you know, even if you said that this is a discernible sector for the last decade at the most, as a discernible sector, it's been around for a long time, but, you know, kind of building up its thing. Let's build it right. Mm. And you've got to start with people, and you've got to start with mindset, isn't it?
Totally. Absolutely. And I think what's really interesting is, so this is the 10th year that I've been doing stuff with electric cars. My first year was in 2016, driving around the UK and Ireland in a Kia Soul EV, which was excellent. And I'm hoping to do something similar in April this year, just for fun. And one of the big things, that was my first experience of an electric car, but one of the big things I learned was how willing people were to speak and talk about this stuff the whole way around that 3-week journey. The amount of wonderful people I met that were willing to speak about electric cars was great. So I agree. And I think it's definitely built on a foundation of people who enjoy discussing this stuff, and it's now about kind of getting that out into the wider world. So I think, yeah, that, you know, we're all humans first, aren't we? And to do our best work, we've got to look after ourselves.
Absolutely. The great phrase is, we're human beings, we're not human doings. You know, it's not about what we do, it's about who we are. And that's the most important thing. And Jess, you've been a shining example of what good looks like in the human world of being. There you go. Fabulous. Well, listen, everybody, do check out all of our other podcasts. I promise you that we do talk about electric vehicles and all of that good stuff on some of them. But as we've discovered, it is about the people, and it is about that openness and vulnerability that gives us the strength to move forward. Been fabulous. Jess, thank you so much. And John, thank you for supporting. In the meantime, everybody, check out Jess in LinkedIn and a YouTube channel. You can find her there, I'm sure. We'll put all of those details in the notes. You can find her. But thank you, and have a great day.